Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. This hour on the program, the Columbus Symphony might not be back next fall. Attorney General Mark Dayan, the state Democratic Party, has disowned him. And Columbus streetcars on the skids, maybe all this and more up for discussion as we talk with Columbus Dispatch columnist Ann Fisher. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. We're at 614-292-8513. You can email your comments or questions to openline at WOSU.org. Well, the Columbus Symphony, good ticket sales recently and apparently increasing through the season. More than 1,000 tickets sold to several performances. But, you know, as you know, they got the Pops concerts on the Chem Abstract Lawn canceled. Doubtful the next season if management and musicians can't come to an agreement. And I guess the question is, do we really want a symphony in Columbus? I mean, collectively, do we really want one?
I think I was interested that the ticket sales have gone up. It kind of reminds me of how the value of a painting goes up when the artist dies.
Yeah.
yeah. And that's sort of what I think is going on there. And I would have liked to have gone this weekend myself, and I'm not a regular symphony goer. But I do appreciate it, and I like that it's in my city. I don't know, though, whether people necessarily understand the finances of such a thing and how much it is dependent on philanthropy.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of like the newspaper. We don't make our the living of a newspaper doesn't come from subscriptions. It comes from advertisers.
Sure.
And it's sort of the same thing with the symphony.
You know, it's very interesting. I think, and I don't regularly attend the symphony either, but I like knowing it's there. I think there's a whole big portion of the public that doesn't necessarily go to concerts. But we'd like to know that such arts institutions are there. Just the knowledge that they're there enriches the city.
Well, because it attracts all kinds of different people who do care about those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And we want that cosmopolitan atmosphere in Columbus.
Have we got it yet?
In some ways we do. I was just talking with a high school student for a future column, and we were talking about she loves the growing ethnicity, the growing diversity of Columbus.
Yes.
And I said, I don't know what everyone's so hung up about, everybody learning the English language all the time. I love sitting in a restaurant and hearing people chatter in different languages. It makes me that to me was what represents the growth is that very diversity and ethnicity. For other people, it is the arts, and it kind of depends on what your deal is. I mean, I love the arts too. I love knowing the gallery hops there. Although since I had a kid, you know, I haven't ventured there very often in the last 12 years. But it's there, and I'm hoping it'll still be there. And it's kind of like the symphony. I used to go to the opera all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be just as sad to see the opera go. I'm hoping I can get back to it someday.
But you know, all these things bring people to the city, as you say. The businesses want to locate here. Interesting people come here as a result. And the ethnicity is very important too. People always. Often compare Columbus unfavorably to Portland, Oregon, but Portland, Oregon is strictly white bread. You know, I mean, the ethnicity level is very low there, and I think that's not very interesting.
Yeah.
So I appreciate, you know, the Somali population and the Latino population and other populations that we have here, and they've grown in recent years. Well, the symphony is 57 years old, apparently, and I saw an online interview in which the manager of the symphony, Tony Beadle, asked what I thought was a pretty good question. Why hasn't the orchestra in 57 years come up with a substantial endowment?
Mm-hmm.
They've got an endowment, but I think it's about $4 million. It's not very much.
No.
And you have to ask the question over the years, why those who are wealthier in Columbus, because I think of an endowment, it can depend on public subscription, but it also depends, frankly, on people who are wealthier. Why more of them haven't stepped up to the table to ensure a real endowment for the orchestra like the Cincinnati Orchestra has.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the Cleveland Orchestra has the Rockefeller fortune, I guess, from way back.
And I think a lot of it has to do with corporate entities, corporate identities in the city. And since I moved here 20 years ago, that's changed a lot and faded a lot. You know, there's Nationwide and there's Worthington's, you know, but there isn't a lot of – it seems like it's been depleted in the last 20 years. They moved out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big impact on things like the arts when you're losing that larger corporate identity.
But then the question is, do we want, I mean, totally, as a totality, the people of Columbus, do we care whether there's a symphony or not? I mean, many people might be home to go to Kroger's or Giant Eagle, get a six-pack of beer, pop it, and watch TV.
Well, I mean that's the all-about-me problem, you know, that, well, I don't
you
go there. I wrote
a
column about
All
About Me. Thanks.
Tell us about All About Me.
Oh, boy, I got a lot of feedback on that column. Actually, that column was written as an eraser. I mean, I needed to erase all these thoughts that were running through my mind. I had been out of town, and I was looking on the Hot Topic on the Dispatch website, where people vote on issues and then add their comments. And I was just amazed and appalled at the, it doesn't affect me, it doesn't affect me, it doesn't affect me, it doesn't affect me. And I started to realize, all right, I realized that this is the way it is with so many things. And we don't see the community as a totality. We only see it in terms of ourselves. And I'm probably guilty of that on some level too. And in fact, I included a "it's all about me" remarks in that column that I tend to toward, and so that it wouldn't be just trashing everybody else.
Sure.
And, you know, because I certainly don't live in a glass house. So, but that is a problem.
Give us a couple of lines from the column. What were some of the all about me?
Oh, it's – I don't – well, every line started out with I don't care about. I don't care about streetcars. I use the bus. I don't care about buses. They never – you know, I don't care about sidewalks. I never use them. I don't care about bike paths. Why don't they fix the sidewalks? I don't care about city center. I don't care about you know, it goes
it doesn't affect me.
It doesn't affect me. And then the final line of it was welcome to hell, where it's all about me, which is what I think is kind of, to me, that is what it is. It's that if we want to make this a heaven, we got to start thinking about how the totality of people are affected by it and how we create a whole community of different of variety. And that is the community, is variety instead of just what I'm interested in.
Do you have the feeling that, that some communities are better at thinking about the community than others?
I do, and I think there's this, you know, I have nothing to base this on. This is just my idea, but I think a lot of it has to do with early on more ethnic diversity. Columbus is only lately become relatively diverse, really, in the last 20 years, which is very young. Other cities like Cleveland has much deeper roots, and a lot you know, you go there and it's much more ethnic. There's just a lot of variety on that square, and it's been that way
Italian
since the
and
beginning.
Irish and German and African American,
and Toledo was more that way. I still miss the Lebanese restaurants in Toledo. So you know, you take that for granted, but you come to Columbus and it wasn't like that. I mean, I remember there was one Mexican restaurant and that was a big deal. Now they're everywhere, and it's fantastic. But that we're just a very young city in terms of that larger diversity that I think is what enriches any city.
Do you think diversity leads to more community concern among, in other words, less of the all about me syndrome? Or is it something else?
I think diversity just makes it more the starting off points, the footholds that you have in your community, there's more of them. When there's more diversity. But the all about me thing, I think, is about the it's always been this way. It's more like kind of it's always been this way. It's a way it's always been. I always think of the mice in that movie Babe where they're sitting in the corner going, the way it's always been. That's part of the problem too. I'm amazed at people who say they got rid of streetcars because they started using more cars and now they want to bring them back. Well, yeah, because cars aren't an efficient way to get around anymore. Yeah. Buses are not an efficient way to get around anymore. Streetcars, given the right circumstances, can be a very efficient way, very green, and also be that stepping off point to a larger transit community. And I don't know why people keep looking at it as if, well, I can't jump on it the day it's built, so what does it matter to me?
So you think it's a good idea?
Oh, yeah. I've always thought the streetcars are a good idea. And
it's just one route to begin with, 2.6
miles. Right. Well, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah. And
I don't know why that just doesn't seem to sink into people. What do you want? You want to build the whole 20, 50, 70 miles? Okay. I'm for that, too. But realistically speaking, we have to start out short and sweet. And I'll tell you, it didn't get any cheaper, people. isn't getting a bit cheaper. It's going to be more and more expensive. We're going to turn around in 25 years and go, oh, my God, we can't afford to drive our cars downtown. Well, if we had started 25 years ago building the streetcars, building these links, it wouldn't be such a daunting task, but it will be. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. The mayor's office, I've gotten lots of great press releases from them, and the frequently asked question press release was very, very helpful, and he nailed a lot of issues, and I kind of already knew the answers to them, but it was good stuff. But for some reason, that stuff's just not getting out to people, because when you read things like the feedback in the dispatch on the hot topic, should we have streetcars or not, it's clear there's so much information out there that it's clear that for whatever reason, someone hasn't done a very good job of communicating it. And now we have the city council saying, well, gee, we've been out of the loop, and gee, we don't know. Well, how could you possibly be out of the loop?
How could you be out of the loop when everybody knows about it?
I mean, they got to be getting the same press release as I am, and I don't know what they don't know. Apparently we're going to have to wait and see what they don't know, because it's all been set on the back burner again.
So there's a fair amount of opposition then.
There's a lot of opposition. Well, you know, it's that vocal opposition.
Mm, yeah.
I think people that oppose something tend to be more vocal about it. As a Metro columnist, this has been my experience. And although lots of wonderful people send me letters and call me when they like something too, and I really appreciate that. I love them all. But people tend to be more vocal and when they oppose something, and that's what we're getting. And it's no surprise to me. I've never thought it would be any different. But I am disappointed that it's stopping. You know, there's another stop along the way.
Yeah, we don't have a strong sense. No public opinion polling has been done that I know of. We don't have a strong sense as to what the greater community thinks about the streetcar line and the idea of spending the money.
And getting back to that, it's all about me column. I mean, people live in Powell, or they live in New Albany, or they live wherever, Groveport or Lancaster or wherever it might be, and they don't care about Columbus. They don't see Columbus as the center city yet. And it's going to have to start in Columbus. The streetcar lines and the mass transit system and what the transitions we need to go through to modernize it and make it something for the future is not going to start in Groveport. It's not going to start out there. It's not going to start in Powell. It's going to have to start in the center city. And but a lot of people don't care. So they're just apathetic about it. They're not necessarily opposing. It's just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Well, you darn well better start caring if you want to be a 21st century city in 25 years, because we surely aren't one now.
Columbus Dispatch columnist Ann Fisher. Is Columbus an apathetic community? What do you think? Is it too much all about me? This doesn't affect me, so I don't care. And what about the symphony? What about the streetcars? 614-292-8513. You could email a comment or question to openline at WOSU.org. Marty is first. Hello, Marty.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Two things about the symphony. One is that the contributions that members of the symphony make to the Columbus community. My son plays the bassoon in his orchestra, and his teachers are both members of the symphony. And I think that is a really important piece. And the second addition to that piece is my son's American Indian. He belongs also to the Youth Philharmonic Orchestra, which is taught by a member of the symphony. And that symphony is about half non-white. So it's not only an important ground, pipeline for future musicians, but it also is teaching them a lot about working together. Mm-hmm. And I think that's not brought up very often.
Well, I think you bring up another point is that a lot of the musicians in the symphony are not solely symphony musicians. They do a lot of things in the community. They contribute a lot of things to the community. You don't just have to pay to go see them. There are teachers. There are directors. There are many, many other things.
That's true. Marty, you wisely point out. Whoops, I think we've lost Marty's signal there. You wisely point out that there are a lot of spin-off activities here. In fact, there are other musical organizations. A friend of mine became a pianist as a result of when he was a kid. Opera Columbus came to his school, and he heard all these wonderful singers. He said, wow, listen to this. And he began to recognize at that moment that he wanted a professional career in music. So there are these situations. Thanks, caller. Charlotte is on the line. Hi, Charlotte.
Good morning, Fred. Thank you for taking my call. I have two comments. First of all, I think I'm not so sure it has to do with ethnic diversity. I came of political age in Chicago, which is extremely diverse. I think the lack of interest in public projects as social goods has to do with this mentality we've been buying hook, line, and sinker for the past 30, 35 years, that if you're going to take a penny from me in tax money, you must, by definition, be mismanaging it.
That's an interesting,
And the other thing is, I know people who are highly interested in public transportation in Columbus, myself among them, because we take COTA. And the universal response I hear is, well, how are they going to mismanage this one? How do you propose to be a city in the 21st century when you can't get your worker bees, your baristas, and your hotel maids, and your lab techs, and everybody else? You cannot work a third shift or a second shift in this town and reliably get home on public transportation as we have it. If you're going to work a third shift, you have to go in a couple hours early because, yeah, the buses will be running, you know, when you get off work. I know one woman who works as a housekeeper at at Ohio State University Hospitals. When she gets a weekend assignment for a second shift, she goes ahead and tells her boss, well, just go ahead, and she works two double shifts on Fridays and Saturdays and sometimes Sunday nights because she has no way to get home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right? Mm-hmm. So I am extremely skeptical about, you know, the Mr. Rogers neighborhood trolley car up and down the Short North, because for me to get through the Short North on the number two bus, that is yet another obstruction. Well, and I'm not convinced that the powers that be in this town, basically you've got a Democratic city in a Republican county and they're all peeing on each other's projects, to put it politely, I'm not convinced that they can manage it well.
Okay, so you're part of the people that say that whenever we give them a tax dollar, they're probably going to mismanage it. You're part of that group.
No, I'm okay. Part of the group that is extremely skeptical with from what I have seen in the way of quality of public transportation in the way of COTA.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not convinced that the powers that be in this town are committed to public transit well enough to run it well.
Well, there's just a lot of stuff you've just said there that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Number one, the proposal to get the streetcars on the road, so to speak, would not come from tax money. It would come from I can't remember the phrase, but it would come from the property owners along the line that would benefit from having a dedicated line. Wouldn't come out of my pocket.
There's going to be an increase in parking fees, a surcharge on tickets.
There's going to be things like that, but it's not going to be – that'll be user fees.
Yeah.
Like when you use gasoline, you pay a gasoline tax because you use the roads. That's a user fee. Number two, the Mr. Rogers trolley reference.
Yeah.
You're dead wrong. And if you go to the websites, go to Portland's. Go to Portland's website. That's what they're patterning it after. Please, I urge you, go and look at what they're talking about before
because
you.
Because I have ridden trolleys in Düsseldorf.
It is not. Well, okay, all right. But let's say, get the trolley out of your mind. You are wrong. No offense. I say that with, you know, but you are wrong. Get on a computer. Get on a website out of Portland. Go to their mass transit link and look at what the streetcars are. They are not trolleys. There's not going to be a guy in a hat on it. There's not going to be a ringing bell. It is going to be very streamlined, very modern, very 21st century.
So in other words, like a light rail between tubing and a
yes,
streetcar.
And it is going to be an absolutely necessary link. You have to start with these inner central city links. You have to start that way. And then you start adding on. It's just the way it has to be, and I completely agree with you. And as far as the ethnicity goes, I understand what you're saying, but I think the lack of the historical lack of ethnicity in this city has breeded not contempt, but again apathy for what other people have to go through and how other people have to live.
That might be amongst the powers that be, but where I hear I'm on the south end, there we've got a lot of ethnicity back and forth, and we're dealing with each other all the time.
Talking in a larger sense. I'm not talking about neighborhoods. I get you what you're saying, I think that there's just that I don't have a problem with it. Why should you? And the fact is, the people that are going to have to back this stuff are the people that don't have a problem with it. Are the people that can afford it, the people that are already driving downtown.
Well, I think one way we could start is we could take with the county board and the rest of it. They don't get their gas reimbursed. They get a monthly bus pass to toddle around and do public business, and I bet you we'd get a better improvement in public transit real quick.
Or at least they get the option for that. That's an interesting idea.
You know.
That's an interesting
idea. You stand there on a corner in a snowstorm waiting on a bus that doesn't come, and you're going to be interested in public transit real quick.
Right. And then where's your voice? Often that voice, we don't hear that voice. We hear the voices of people. I know.
I'll tell you, I'm very voicey.
Well, I know. But, I mean, he's not nodding or anything. Don't take that.
No, it's true. Charlotte is certainly voicey, yeah.
So please educate yourself, and I'm saying this to the larger audience, about what the streetcars will look like, what they will be like, and what their purpose is, and what a dedicated route means. It's very important that you understand the economic impact of a dedicated route and what that means to shopkeepers who open up a coffee shop at a stop and know that every day people are going to be there because they have to be there if they want to get on the streetcar. Mm-hmm. I'm way oversimplifying. It's much greater than that.
Yeah. But the only thing, I think really to a certain extent, the thing that I'm very, very dubious about, because like I said, I'm a product of Chicago. I've ridden Chicago Transit Authority on the... And I've worked third shift jobs in Chicago where I could get home at 3 o'clock in the morning if I had to, and we were cut loose from the job or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I know the L, I know the buses. Mm-hmm. I've been in Stuttgart and in Düsseldorf and Berlin. You know, I've been on streetcars and trolley cars and whatnot.
Okay,
and, in order to sell it, they're going to have basically. They're going to have to be able to prove that they are auditing the books, and it's not going to be another mess like with the COTA rail thing.
Well, I think Charlotte brings up a point about COTA, but I think under new management, COTA is doing very well. It's true the old management really fouled it up and was really irresponsible, right? But the new management seems to be doing quite well. All right, let us go to Paul. Paul's on the air. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Hi there. How you doing?
Good.
Thank you for taking my call. I don't know how I can follow up with the previous caller. That was certainly quite dramatic, but I'm from Chicago, too. I just moved out here. And I have to say this, if Columbus wants to be a world-class city, they have to start embracing the world. And from what I've seen watching the local news, nothing exists beyond the 270 Beltway.
Tell us more.
I mean, I've watched the local news. For a week, I gave up in disgust because in Chicago, you know, the Pope's in New York. The lead story in Columbus is the district attorney sex scandal. In Chicago, they dispatch reporters to New York to cover the Pope. I realize that Columbus isn't a market like Chicago, but...
Well, we did dispatch a reporter to New York City to cover the Pope, and the Pope was front page for at least a couple days, and I think took up a big part of our insight section. So I think the very first day it wasn't, strangely, I wasn't in on the decision, but we did send Meredith Hegney to New York City, and she wrote several articles.
Uh-huh. But Paul, what do you think? Do you think are and when compared to Chicago, what are the marked differences in Columbus in terms of lack of public spirit? I mean, do you see a difference?
Yes, I do. I mean, it's like I came here and it's all about the OSU Buckeyes, and I'm just like, what's the big deal?
Oh boy, you're in trouble. We're going to trace this call.
I'm from Michigan. I'm actually from Grand Rapids, so everyone's always told me I have a Chicago accent, and. Chicago is a fantastic place. It's a big city. Again, I will say that it has a history. You know, it's a cradle of ethnic diversity too. So a lot of different needs having to be met. And again, I think Columbus was not that way. It's very relative. Well, only 20 years ago, it wasn't. So I think that makes a big difference. But
so, Paul, if all you hear about here is the Buckeyes, what did you hear about in Chicago? The Cubs are.
My observation is, and you'll have to pardon me because I grew up in Chicagoland, is Chicago is a world-class city.
Well, yeah, sure.
You know, they look out beyond, you know, the I-270 Beltway, whereas Columbus, is, to me, it's all about the Buckeyes. I'm like, good God, there's more to life than the Buckeyes.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of new people in this area that would agree with you on that and that struggle with that. Myself included. I'm not from Ohio and I'm not from Central Ohio specifically. And yeah, I was kind of shocked at that too. But I guess the idea there was that it was the only team in town. And so it became, they kind of radicalized as a fan base, and because it was their only team. That's been the explanation so far.
Okay, Paul, got to move on. Thank you for your call. Columbus Dispatch columnist Ann Fisher with us. We're going to take a little break here, hear a couple of announcements, then back with you callers at WOSU 820 NPR News.
Everybody's an expert on their own lives. And on Talk of the Nation, we ask you to share your stories.
These techniques were used on me when I went through resistance training, sleep deprivation, putting bags over our heads.
I'm Neil Conan. Real stories from real people about real issues that matter to you. Join us. Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation will be here later this afternoon, beginning at 2 o'clock, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning, I'm Amy Jurevich. It is 52 degrees at 10:31. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning. Your membership with WOSU provides you with the news and information you rely on. And in this pivotal election year, your support is more important than ever. Becoming a member is easy when you go online to wosu.org/give. Thank you for your continued support of WOSU 820, NPR News. In the weather forecast for today, cloudy skies and a high of 58. Skies clear overnight and chilly, a low of 42. And then a beautiful day for Tuesday, mostly sunny and warmer with a high around 70 degrees.
Support for the Statehouse News Bureau stories on WOSU comes from the Ohio Education Association, representing 131,000 teachers, support professionals, and higher education faculty who are working for great public schools for every child. Online at OHEA.org.
Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. We're talking about the Columbus Symphony might not be back in the fall. Streetcars on the skids, maybe. A lot of opposition, at least vocal opposition anyway. We're with Columbus Dispatch columnist Ann Fisher at 614-292-8513. And you can email questions or comments to openline at wosu.org. We're also talking about what kind of a city Columbus is. Are we apathetic, as some might suggest? We, you know, up here on the computer, Ann, we have the Portland, Oregon streetcar site, mm-hmm. right? And it's a very interesting, it's a red and blue, very modern-looking tram, I guess almost you'd call it. It's not the conventional
streetcar. It looks more like light rail than I would even say tram. But, yeah, it's very, very modern. And on the inside, I don't know if you can get an interior shot, but, again, very clean, very spacious. They can shape them differently on the inside. The interiors are much nicer than you would think of as a bus interior, much roomier.
Yeah, and they've got maps headroom. And fares. I mean, all the things mm-hmm. you'd expect on a Portland streetcar mm-hmm. site.
And you always know where it's going to be because it has to be there.
Yeah.
It can't go anywhere else. They can't change their minds. They can't 10 years from now go, oh, gee, you know, they can't experiment. The only way they can experiment is by building more track.
Yeah. And also, we were talking during the break, whenever – I bring up the symphony on the show, and I've done this a couple of times here in the last week, and the fact that it may be leaving us. You know, frankly, the phones don't ring off the hook with people saying, we love our symphony, and this is awful. They really don't. I think that's interesting.
Well, you know, I was listening to the show last week with Kathy Kandiski, and she made a good point, a State House reporter for the Dispatch, times are tough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are struggling to put gas in their car and put food on their table. A lot of people are. Particularly the gas part.
Mm-hmm.
People who maybe food's not the issue, but all of a sudden they're getting whacked with, you know, $100-$150 a week in gas because of their job or whatever, because their commute, that sort of thing. It's really hard. And I think that people are kind of overwhelmed right now, a lot of people, by the times, the economic times that we're in. It's hitting us, a lot of us, in places we're not used to being hit.
But where's the passion for the Columbus Symphony? So, where is it out there?
So I agree. Where are the picketers? Where are the and supposedly the musicians are – they've been advised not to be out there and out front and I guess they're trying to be very classy and elegant about this whole thing, but it's kind of like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. They're sort of, it's all looks kind of nice, and everybody looks pretty fancy about this. But meanwhile, back at the ranch, the symphony's going down.
Yeah.
I don't know where the panic is. I haven't seen it either.
All right, let us go to our callers. Jerome, you want to say something about the Columbus Symphony, huh?
Well, I have a question for the guest. If she thinks ticket prices are a problem, and here's why. When I was a kid, I recall my parents having season tickets every year to light opera, and this is in the San Francisco Bay Area. And, you know, my parents survived on his veteran benefits and his salary as a shoe salesman at that time. And music is like just, you know, the heart of my wife's life. But we can't afford tickets with two children.
Jerome, what are the ticket prices? What's the range?
Well, what I we haven't really checked into it because we just saw, you know, one person said, you know, they had, you know, cut back going because they had a kid and they were paying like $45 a ticket and thought that wasn't unreasonable.
I think you can get a Columbus Symphony seat for a lot less than $45 a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's down front maybe or something.
And then there's Picnic with the Pops. Sure, you can you know, lay down some cash for those fancy tables in the front, but there's also the lawn seats, which are very reasonable. And
yeah. Okay.
I mean, I don't think of taking my kid to the symphony every, you know, every month or every show. I think it's the sort of thing you expose a child to unless they're, you know, absolutely gaga over it, you know, a couple times a year maybe or once a year, like ballet or that. You know, to me it's not about schlepping the kids there. It's about exposing them. I mean, didn't you grow up with what was the name of that program on Sundays? Children's –
Leonard Bernstein concerts?
The Leonard Bernstein concerts.
Music for young people?
Right. I grew up with that. And then there was, you know, Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom and then the Ed Sullivan Show. I mean, that was a standard part of our fare every day. And I think that's sort of the issue with kids. For me, the issue with kids is it's just hard to get away for a night out to the symphony. I don't go to a lot
of
things.
Why aren't people taking older kids with them? Or, you know, I mean, that's what I've heard from friends with kids who are old enough to go. They just say, you know, good tickets, you know, 2-3 kids can't afford it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, but, Jerome, I think any live performance, I mean, if you get live theater or a live rock
concert,
you know, anything live in concert is going to be pricey. And it does limit it to a certain class. I mean, to somebody who has enough disposable income. There's no question about that. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's not like going to a movie at the Dollar Matinee or something. You can't.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Can I make one additional comment?
Sure.
You were talking about, you know, the Buckeyes. And I'm not from the state either. And I could imagine a lot of people being put off by the intensity of it. Here in Marysville, the elementary school had a Buckeye Day before the OSU-Michigan game, and that's the only event like that. And I've been talking with the principal, I've been talking with the superintendent, say, why is that the only school that's acknowledged in this part of the country?
Mm-hmm.
There's very good liberal arts schools here.
Sure.
Why aren't the schools saying to the kids, well, let's have a university day?
Mm-hmm.
And why is it only football? Why is it only men's football that's being acknowledged? I mean, they
I bet Gordon Gee would agree with
you. Crafts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were, and I think that's, you know, I don't think there's, I haven't seen any substantial evidence, any surveys, but, you know, it's a turnoff.
Yeah.
Well, Jerome, I got to run. Thanks very much for your thoughts.
Bye.
And Susan is next. Hello, Susan.
Hi. I'd like to make a couple of comments about the symphony. Number one, I don't know if people realize exactly how much the symphony does beyond giving concerts on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
As the schools have cut back on their music education programs, the symphony has stepped up, and they do much, much outreach. They're in the schools all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of competitions, and a lot of the musicians are deeply involved in giving lessons to students throughout the community. And, you know, if that dries up and goes away, there is no music of that nature in Columbus. If the symphony were to cut back, as the board of directors suggested, it would become a chamber orchestra,
mm-hmm.
which is not the same venture at all.
Right.
Second of all, I really wonder how it is possible that a symphony can exist and be managed so that it has no endowment.
Mm-hmm. After 57 years, yeah. Mm-hmm. Why? How is that?
How is that possible so that when tough times come, as they do, recessions are not a single event. They happen. They're cyclical.
Yeah. There is an endowment, but it's small. I think about $4 million, if I could be corrected on that. But there's a small endowment.
Sort of irrelevant.
Yeah.
But I checked out the Symphony Strong page, which has a lot of links to other web pages, and they make comparisons of the size of the symphony, comparing it to to Cleveland, to Cincinnati, to Dayton, to Pittsburgh, to Philadelphia. And, some of the statements that I've heard the chairman of the board make do not jibe with the information that's on that webpage. The Columbus Symphony is smaller, the musicians are paid less, mm-hmm. and the seasons are shorter. Mm-hmm. What's wrong? How come the other places can have a more successful enterprise? It's not because there's no money in this town.
Susan, what do you think the answer to that question is?
Well, I think that you need committed board members who take a longer look. Mm-hmm. You have to have a capital campaign.
Yeah.
You can't have your symphony moving from time to, from season to season. You know, any enterprise that's based on fund accounting is gonna see a bad result. Look at Antioch mm-hmm. University. The same thing happens there. You need a big endowment to survive. And if you've got a board of directors that's just looking to pad a resume and saying, I'm on this board, but I'm not really passionate about the symphony. I don't really care about the symphony. They're not going to be doing anything.
That's your impression of the symphony board?
Yes, it is. I'm sorry.
Okay. Don't apologize.
I've been involved with the symphony in different degrees over many years, and I've seen good boards and I've seen bad boards. I don't think that this is one of the good ones.
Okay.
But that doesn't excuse any of them. There should be a healthy endowment.
By now, certainly after a half century, you would think there'd be a healthy endowment.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And they should be having capital campaigns on a regular basis. And people would know that their money is not going to, cover the behind of somebody, in a season and make up for shortfalls. It's going to build a sound future for the organization, which does far more for this community than people realize. It's an essential part of the makeup of this city, and I think also some blame can be laid on the artistic directors for not reaching out to people. I've heard young people say, what an awesome experience it was when I went and they did a, Hollywood at the symphony or something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Yeah.
Tony Bennett comes, it's a sellout.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And another thing we have to realize is that the Ohio Theater is a huge house. You have a sellout at Severance Hall. It's 1,800 people. You have 1,800 people at the Ohio Theater. You still have 1,000 empty seats.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
And it's pretty discouraging when you go and you see all those empty seats. Yeah. But you're never going to get anybody behind building a world-class symphony hall if you don't have a burgeoning audience for the symphony. I've seen what the opera's done. They've done an outstanding marketing mm-hmm. turnaround to bring in people. They market opera as if it were a musical soap opera. People love it. They come. Mm-hmm. They sell out all the time.
Yeah.
You have to reach. I mean, look at all the Pops concerts. Picnic at the Pops, mm-hmm. the Popcorn Symphonies, the Holiday Pops. They're big money makers.
Right.
That should be telling them something.
Well,
you
Susan,
don't
thanks.
Have
we
to have.
We
yeah,
got to
okay.
move on. Thanks. We wonder sure. where that passion was. You were hearing some of it from you, Susan. Thanks so much for calling.
Okay, bye.
We do have the ticket prices for the symphony. This is for the concert of May 30th, and it's true that the front balcony is $43, the orchestra is $40, but if you go up to the upper balcony, which is normally where I would sit, mm-hmm. it's $18, so you can see it. And that, when you look at live theater prices and you look at concert prices in other venues, that's not much money.
It's a drop in the bucket, plus you're not being inundated with all kinds of crap to buy on the way in.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good point to bring up those ticket prices. That's cheap. That's absolutely
$18, yeah,
cheap.
For a live?
$18. That's a couple drinks at a bar.
Sure.
I don't think the symphony does. And I'm like you, Fred. I didn't know what the ticket prices were. Why don't I know that? Why aren't they telling people that?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You can't – the cheapest seat at the Blue Jackets is more than that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, you got to get all the junk on the way in, you know.
Columbus Dispatch columnist Ann Fisher is with us. And we have an email from Carl here at openline@wosu.org. He says, we need to build light rail or monorail to the burbs before the streetcars downtown get built. Downtown transport can be done by small buses. We also need to concentrate on light rail from Cincinnati to Cleveland via Columbus rather than a third lane on I-71.
I guess what I'm trying to say, you say we need to build a light rail or monorail to the burbs. To the burbs from where? Do you just want to link the burbs up with each other?
Because presumably down to downtown, right?
I live in Worthington. I don't really go to the other burbs except to visit friends. When I want to go to an event or I'm doing something, I'm going to be heading downtown or near the central city. So to the burbs from where?
Well, maybe
what
from
are you
downtown,
talking about?
Let's say from.
Well,
from,
right. Then we need to build light rail or monorail to the burbs from downtown. But you can't build a monorail right into the center city. You need to have a step-off point, and that would be something like a streetcar. And again, it's that dedicated route that's so critical.
Makes sense. Email from Tracy here. Maybe Columbus could be a city of creatively interconnected districts. Instead of a major metropolitan area, each area could specialize in bringing out Columbus's diversity.
You've just described a major metropolitan area in that. Those are the one and the same thing. But what is the difference here is how do you get to those different communities that you're talking about? That's the problem. Getting people there, having a place for them to park, and making things a reasonable time frame.
All right, let's go back to our callers here with Pam. Hello, Pam.
Hi. And first I want to say I want to thank you very much for the It's All About Me article. I had read it that day, and I said, oh, this is good. This is really good. This is something I need to share with my children because I'm always forever in search of sharing with them things that bring them away from just themselves and look at the world in a more open way, something that I'm not seeing that they experience in their community. I apologize for not talking about streetcars and symphony.
No, that's okay.
But I don't know enough about the topic, although I am for whatever can enhance the city. I moved here. I hate to bring this up because I think I'm the third caller to bring this up, but I moved here from Chicago 6 years ago.
Mm.
And I apologize for saying this.
Don't
but
apologize.
I thought after I moved here a few months later, I thought, oh, God, please do not let me die here.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I was so disappointed in so many things. And 6 years later, I'm still struggling, but there are certain aspects of my community I love. However, there's a lot I don't love. And the first thing was the whole Buckeye craziness. We're Michigan people, even though we moved here from Chicago. My husband and I went to the University of Michigan. And my husband told me before we moved here, this is a different world we're moving to. And I did not understand fully what he meant until I moved here. And we got literally just attacked from all directions for being Michigan people.
Oh, yeah. I know. I went to Michigan State, and I get the same thing. I mean, no matter where I go to speak publicly, I always kind of like ease into that. And they go, ooh.
Exactly. And everywhere you go, I'm not one to wear Michigan garb, but if any of my children have something on, there's always a comment of, oh, you're brave wearing that around here. And my poor children, the older ones have gotten know how to handle themselves. But when they're young in elementary school and the resistance from classmates and teachers, teachers, unfortunately, it really leads.
Teachers.
Oh,
yeah.
Teachers run around with their Buckeye necklaces and all their scarlet and gray on football Fridays.
And they disparage kids because they're wearing Michigan stuff? Come on.
Right, and they say things to the children. And
The teachers say things. What do they say?
They will. I can't give you specifics because I don't know. But like
they admonish them.
They do say things like, oh, you know, like, what are you wearing that for? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, and they're doing it in a joking way. But when you're 6, 7, 8 years old, you take it personally. Like it's and my son, who's older now, in first grade, he was literally on Michigan week on Friday before the game. He was literally chased around the playground by his classmates. He to this day, he probably wouldn't admit it because he's 12 now, but he to this day was very, very just horrified. horrified by the whole incident. He came home very upset that day. And anyway, that whole Buckeye thing is a huge problem, and it really does stem from the adults, because if parents
surely it does. Absolutely.
And teachers were not being so
stupid.
Yeah, it really is. It's a mentality that really, I don't think the adults understand how bad it is. And I don't know why that is, but, maybe it has something to do without having not been elsewhere in the world, because that's the only explanation I can have for it. This, I tell people this all the time. This is the first place I've lived, and I lived a lot of places, where people do not have the right to be for the team that they want to be for.
Mm.
This is the first place. I mean, I have never lived in a city where they are so resistant to any type of anything other than the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Well, Pam, we must move on, but I thank you for your call. Appreciate
it. Okay, you're welcome.
And you're
It's funny. We gave my son he's a hockey player. He's 12 years old, too. He gave him he asked for a Michigan State University hockey jersey and wears it proudly to every Blue Jackets game. And it never fails. When I've gone with him, somebody always says something about how can you let him wear that in here? Aren't you worried about his safety? I mean, it's a 12-year-old kid. It's like, obviously they're joking, but I share your concern. Even after 20 years, it's kind of shocking to hear a grown adult say that to a child.
Sure. But by the way, we mentioned that the cheapest Columbus Symphony tickets for the concert of May 30th are $18. And we point out also, if you have a WOSU member card, you can buy one and get one free. We want to get that plug in too. Paul is on the line. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I am also from Chicago.
What is this, a mass outflow from
is this a
Chicago?
Club?
I'm not going to bash Columbus. I do like Columbus a lot, actually. And I lived 20 years in New York City before this. I think that Ann makes a great point. We do need a step-off point for public transit. I think in tandem we have to work with reasons to go downtown. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that we have some theaters that bring in touring companies and like that. I think the change in taste is one of the – and I work at the OSU School of Music, I must say, so I'm very tied in with a lot of the symphony people. So I think the change in taste in entertainment has really hurt lots of forms of entertainment, not only the symphony. I'm in theater myself. I'm mortified by the fact that there's only one pro company in a city this size. Milwaukee, which is half the size, has 6 pro companies.
Wow.
I myself started a semi-pro company here, and it's a struggle. Every production is a struggle to get an audience in to just break even. And I think that a lot of it is about changing the mentality, about opening up the options to people besides OSU football. I think that, this is something that's going to take time because basically mm-hmm. there's a culture that's been built here where OSU football has been the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are lots of people, including myself, who don't live for OSU football. And I think a lot of people are afraid to verbalize it, just like the woman before me said, you sort of get admonished. But the thing is, if we all stand up and say, yes, we're all for OSU football, but we like this too,
right?
I think that people will start to branch out. We just don't have the population here that can sustain a symphony, a theater company, a this, a that.
Well, why not? Why don't we, Paul?
I think that it's something that's going to take time.
Right.
How come they've got it in Milwaukee?
It's an old, like Ann said, and like you said, it's an older city, older money. You know, back then people were, going to the symphony. It was a center point of culture. And I think that that's a problem with a younger city.
But Portland, Oregon is not an older city.
I know,
And they support all these things.
And that's why I'm glad we're using them as a model. Because the other thing is, too, I don't know how many people. I came here because this was a gay-friendly city. It is listed as one of the top 20 gay-friendly cities in the country. And I wanted to live in a smaller city after Chicago and New York where I could open a theater company. Portland is one of those cities also. It's smaller. It's very open toward all kinds of people. And I think that in order for Columbus to really, really flourish, it has to welcome all types of ethnic groups.
Sure. Is Columbus a gay-friendly city? Does the reputation prove out?
It does. It does. It's sort of the Austin of Texas. It's an anomaly.
Well, good.
And Cleveland is great. I wouldn't put Cincinnati in that group. But is it a good country? It is a good city for the gay community. But the thing is, in order for the state to really open up its arms to all different groups. That's the only way this state is going to flourish.
Well, Paul, thanks very much for your comments. Gosh, we've got so many people on the line and so few minutes left, but we'll get to as many of you as we can with Columbus Dispatch columnist Ann Fisher here. Eve is with us. Hi.
Hi. I was calling because you said nobody was calling about the symphony.
Not very many.
Bam, bam, bam. There were a whole bunch of calls about the symphony.
See, we got them up around.
But I think that I think the symphony is wonderful. I think it would just be awful if this fine symphony that's been built up over a long period of time were to leave the city. And I would like to say that when you say things like, well, I don't go to the symphony, but I'm glad it's there,
mm-hmm.
It's not going to be there. I mean, you can't count on something being there if you don't support it. It's like being a member of a group that you like to go to occasionally, but not the rest of the time, and then all of a sudden you're surprised when the group is just...
Yeah, but wouldn't you rather have people say, I don't go to the symphony, but I'm glad it's there, rather than I don't go to the symphony and I don't care if it's there or
no,
not.
No,
I would rather
I think there are always going to be people that don't care whether it's there or not. But I think people that say I'm glad it's there should go. And it, you know, you can get little four concert series of tickets. It isn't like you have to go to every performance.
Guess I just don't think they make they advertise well enough. They tell people, and advertising might be sort of the wrong term, but I don't think people understand how affordable the symphony is. It sounds snooty and expensive to a lot of people still, and it's not. It's fabulous entertainment, and it's affordable.
Okay, so you're getting that out today on the radio,
yes.
Hurrah, and just keep spreading that word around. And also, all these people calling in from Chicago. I grew up in Chicago.
Oh, you grew up in Chicago, too.
It's
but
a
I've
Chicago
lived in
theme.
Ohio all my adult life. And I would like to say, if I was in the Chicago suburb that I grew up in, going to the symphony in Chicago would be a major hassle. I mean, just getting there would be such a major hassle and figuring out how to park. I live in Worthington. It's 20 minutes to
right.
go down.
Right,
yeah, very easy.
There,
right.
You can park for $2 under the State House, $3 mm-hmm. in the City Center parking garage.
So not hard.
It's very easy to get to. And
yeah.
You don't have to get all dressed up to go.
No. It's fun to, but you don't have to. And I think, you know, you're right. I mean, Columbus still is a very accessible city.
Right.
You can get where you want to go. In a lot of places, however, the parking is not that easy. It's difficult, particularly in the Short North area. It's very, very difficult to get parking, and that's a big issue. And if I just wanted to pop down to the Short North from my downtown office and have lunch, that's like a half hour just to travel back and forth and maybe park.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, but you're right, it's still very accessible. I live in Worthington, too, and it's 25 minutes to everywhere from Worthington. And it's like that for anyone inside the Beltway. A little pitch for the Beltway.
Eve, thanks for your call. So many people holding, but we have time for only one more call, and that is Mary. Hello, Mary.
Hi. I want to reinforce about four callers ago where someone was hot about the board, et cetera, and I'm hot about everybody seems to be only interested and put money into sports. But something that I am going to pick to highlight is the fact that I don't know about all of them, but I saw I go to the Westminster Thurber talks occasionally and found out that the principal stand-up bass player was going to do a thing for, you know, them there at Westminster Thurber for a lecture
yes.
talk and the play. And I thought, oh, I've never heard that as a solo instrument. I'm going to go and take a listen. And the man's name is Dr. Mark Morton. He not only was there, but I got interested and really enjoyed the music and his conversation and went different places to hear him. And one of them was there's an outfit up in Worthington called the Chamber Music Connection. And there's a woman there who has brought together young people and are training them and give them a performing.
So we're ready to go here. So summary statement is what?
They do wonderful things in the community.
Okay.
I agree.
The symphony doesn't want to, and we all agree with that. Well, Anne, I think we stirred up a hornet's nest here, which is good always.
Well, we found our symphony people, and we certainly tapped into the Chicago group there, which is cool.
We have many people here from Chicago, and some of them regretting it, some of them thinking that, it's an okay community here. Columbus Dispatch columnist Ann Fisher, always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, former CIA analyst Mel Goodman argues that the Central Intelligence Agency is badly in need of reform, and it was politicized in the run-up to the war in Iraq. All of this on listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.